straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
So we're here today with Assemblywoman Gonzalez. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate your time. First of all, you were exposed to COVID-19 recently. So how is your health? How are you feeling? And how did that process look for you?
Well, luckily, completely healthy, done with our two-week quarantine. Our entire family was exposed from a family member. You know, we've been in close contact, but luckily none of us actually developed it. The whole process was, it was a good learning experience, I think, to find out how to, you know, how much time it takes to go get tested, waiting for the test results. Doing a strict quarantine was really difficult, having to rely on other people to bring me groceries and drop them off. And I have, you know, three kids that also were in the house in quarantine, and my husband. And so we got to figure out how to both work and try to occupy their time and really just get through. But we were very blessed in the fact that we never developed it. And so here we are again.
Wonderful. Glad to have you back, and glad that everybody in your family is safe and healthy. Let's just kind of dive into it. You received a lot of criticism lately for authoring and advocating for the gig worker bill, AB5. Can you tell us a little bit about what that addresses pertaining to workers in the community and how we're protecting workers?
Well, obviously, there are a number of people who, in fact, a lot of corporations who don't like the bill AB5 that we did. What we said is you can no longer skirt labor laws by simply requiring somebody to be an independent contractor rather than an employee, and not providing them with the basics that are required of employment in California. Now, it's important to remember that AB5 really came out of a decision in the Supreme Court, a unanimous bipartisan decision from the state Supreme Court called Dynamex. That decision was rendered in April of 2018, and we immediately started hearing from companies, from individuals who said this needs some clarification. Mm-hmm. So what AB5 did was it did clarify that. It allowed for some exemptions for individuals who truly act like small businesses, who are truly sole proprietors, small businesses that act in that way. And we continue to work on that to ensure that's clarified. And we had to do some clarifications this year. But it also ensures that a vast majority of workers who work for a company, who do the work of that company, are treated like an employee. And this matters right now more than ever. Yes. It means that those employees have access to unemployment insurance if they're laid off. It means that they have access to paid family leave, paid sick days, minimum wage, overtime. It means that the company's part of Social Security. Often it means health care. So these are issues that I think we're finding out more than ever why these safety net programs are so important.
Absolutely. That's kind of why I wanted to bring it up, was just to kind of touch on those safety net programs and the importance of companies providing, you know, health care to people who act like employees. So I think that is really important to clarify, especially now when we have a pandemic and people were being treated, you know, as temporary workers, contractors, independent contractors, when they were actually employees. So thank you for clarifying that. You've also said, you know, very publicly that the system is rigged against the working class. I think people are now seeing this directly as the federal supplement to unemployment is ending, and many undocumented workers were ineligible to receive any unemployment, stimulus, other government assistance. So what can be done to remedy this situation, as many of these individuals are part of a community and aren't being protected?
There's so much, you know, before we even entered into the pandemic, I think a lot of us noticed that the system was rigged. We have people becoming billionaires, now possibly a trillionaire, while the people who actually do the work for them are making maybe minimum wage or just a little bit over that and can barely make ends meet. Housing costs continue to go up. And that rise of income inequality between those people who are almost hoarding the capital and those people who are making the money for these CEOs and stockholders to become rich has really grown. As a result, you have disparities that we're seeing that affect everybody's life, disparities in healthcare, disparities in housing, disparities and basically just being able to make ends meet. So it was rigged. And then with COVID, we're seeing, I think, even an exasperation of that, right? We see that The people who are most affected by the virus tend to be those who entered into this time period with the most vulnerabilities. Obviously, yeah, that's $600 extra on unemployment insurance. I keep telling everybody, August 1, it's going to be a hard reckoning, because when that goes away, that's a lot of money that people are going to be losing. It's also the same time that we're going to start seeing some increases in evictions. Mm-hmm. And so people who maybe were protected through to part of this time are going to have to pay rent that maybe they won't have money to pay. We're seeing people still have to work as essential workers through this pandemic, and they tend to be working class as well, without access necessarily to health care or access to capital in a way that would allow them to stay home. We're seeing that in particular, and a lot of people don't like to admit to this, that we relied heavily on the state on undocumented workers. Mm-hmm. And during this entire process, we saw how unfair that was. On one hand, we were calling undocumented workers essential workers. They're still picking in our farms. They're still picking in our fields. They're getting COVID, unfortunately, at very high rates. They're sewing masks and getting COVID and dying at high rates doing that. They're cleaning up in facilities that need deep cleaning. And so, you know, we have this dirty secret that we rely on what we are now saying is essential workers. But at the same time, those who ended up unemployed had zero access to unemployment insurance, even though they paid into it. Those who are maybe in a mixed status household saw that they not only didn't get a stimulus check, but nobody in their household got a stimulus check simply because they were part of the family. Yeah. So the disparities that are caused by sheer cruelness at the federal level have really shown us that, on one hand, we're looking at a group of workers that we've accepted that we need in this country. We need them. We call them essential. We would not have food on the table if it were not for undocumented workers in California. And on the other hand, we want to say, when things get tough, when you lose your job, when you get sick, we're not going to care for you. I think that's unfair, and it really shows the need for comprehensive immigration reform.
Absolutely. So that's kind of, you know, addressing the main issue. There's this rising COVID infection in the Hispanic and Latinx communities. At one point in San Diego, it was up to 70% of COVID cases. It looks like it's gone back down to kind of around 60%, obviously varying every day. What are some of your thoughts on the reasons behind this issue? You know, we've talked about a lot of these people are undocumented. A lot of them are essential workers. They don't have the luxury of staying home during this time. Any other ideas on these kind of rising cases?
Well, we know a lot it has to do with exposure. If you can't stay home, if you have to go out and interface with the public or with other workers, you're going to be more apt to get COVID. And that's happened up and down the state. And you have different regions where the hospitalizations of Latinos in particular are extremely high. Some of that results from longstanding health issues that result from not having access to healthcare. We know we have what they call the comorbidities in healthcare that make us more vulnerable to this virus. Things like asthma, because we live in areas where air quality has been bad and we have overwhelming rates of asthma. Diabetes, because we live in areas that are food deserts or don't have access to fresh fruit and vegetables. And so, you know, all these longstanding issues that have affected Latinos in our health are now making it harder for Latinos who get COVID to rebound as quickly. We have a higher population of individuals who don't have health insurance. We have a higher population of individuals who live in more dense situations with more family members and more generations of individuals. And so, you know, we have, even in my own house, my stepfather lives with us and our kids live with us. So we have three generations, and that's so normal. And so when you have somebody who has to go out and work and brings that home, everybody is put at risk. And so, and we live in areas that are more densely populated, where we tend to be renters more than homeowners. And so we're living in apartments and areas where people are very close together. It's harder to keep that social distancing we ask for. So there's so many compounding factors that really do result, or we knew that coming in. We knew that we had these issues coming in. But when there's a virus like this out there, we know that it affects us more.
Yeah, it's been very disproportionate to our community, especially here in San Diego. What can be done on a statewide level to protect our Latino workers, our undocumented workers, even our documented workers who are just, you know, like fast food workers, people who are considered essential, but not really receiving proper benefits and proper care?
So we're continuing to push on all of these issues on the state level. We worked with the governor's office to create a fund for undocumented workers who weren't able to access UI unemployment insurance to access that. We also put into the budget that if you're an I-10 filer, so if you file under a tax ID number, which means you're filing your taxes, you're paying everything, you're working, but you have no access, that you can qualify for the earned income tax credit if you have small children. So we're trying to slowly normalize the experience of working undocumented folks in California, ensure that they have a little bit of a safety net. It's never going to be as much. Our hopes to expand health for all have been thwarted, of course, with this, because we just don't have enough money. So although undocumented children can get health care for free, our efforts to bring that to seniors was cut short, unfortunately. But we're going to continue to push as well in the workplace. We have bills going through the Assembly and the Senate now that protect farm workers and make sure that the standards of farm workers, which of course are overwhelmingly Latino immigrants, that they are not passing, that the OSHA standards are adopted and forced into the farms, and that there's adequate PPE, that there's adequate social distancing, that there's adequate access to washing their hands, and very simple issues like that. We also have a bill going through right now dealing with garment workers and making sure that, so we saw in LA, there's a factory, in fact, where I think 300 garment workers have contracted COVID, and quite a few have died. These are mainly women, some men too, but mainly women, Latinas mainly, who were sewing, I think, t-shirts and dresses before this happened. Now they're sewing masks and getting sick because of their work.
You mentioned, you know, the resources not being translated correctly, not being widespread.
Not quite so much in Spanish, and sometimes mm-hmm. it didn't translate correctly. I kept telling the folks at the county, you keep talking about backyard barbecues, but, you know, they're talking about going to grandma's for her birthday. You know, abuelitas, there's a reason. Even the way we were talking about, like, don't do this, you know, there was nothing about the barbecue per se that was problematic. Don't get your family together for a family dinner. Sometimes the way we talk about things and the way we express it don't provide, I think, our communities with enough information. So we're really pushing on that. And as chair of the Latino Caucus, we have demanded, in fact, and we have upcoming another meeting with the governor to find out specifically what his plans are up and down the state in these hotspots where Latinos really are disproportionately being affected. Spoke to a doctor at USC. He said 90% of the hospitalizations are Latino. Spoke to a doctor at Stanford University, Stanford, Santa Clara County. It's not like San Diego or LA. He said 70% are Latino. If you look in the Empire and in the Valley, you know, especially in farm working communities and places like Salinas, it's being ravaged. Our community is being ravaged by this. And I think sometimes it also affects how the rest of the world sees it. You know, we know it's a serious issue. And a lot of folks who are saying it's not serious just haven't felt when one of their family members or somebody that they know got it. And so I think it's a big difference of perception at this point.
They haven't been directly affected by it. And then the death rates are much lower for people who've had access to healthcare their whole lives, access to decent healthcare, who are treated and well and taken seriously by doctors when they go in, and have had access to information also. Are there any websites for people who are undocumented to be able to obtain some of the measures that you mentioned, you know, people who are filing taxes with a matriculation number to be able to collect that? Is there a website that they can go on and fill out an application to retrieve some of that?
Locally, Jewish Family Services was dealing with the DRE money. I think that there's still money available. They're still taking applications from what I understand. We put all the information that we put out in from our assembly office in English and Spanish.
So you had said, locally Jewish Family Services is kind of distributing some of those funds.
Yes.
And then your office also put out information, bilingual information.
Yes. And you can get on our email list or visit our website and we can get you those links.
Sounds good. Yeah, that would be great, because I think a lot of people just in that position wouldn't even know where to start with those types of applications, or they don't trust the application process. They don't want to be in contact with the state in order to retrieve some of that funding that's available to them.
Yeah, and we try to make sure that everything we put out when we we talk about resources, food resources, for example, often don't fall into any of the public charge issues. Sometimes it's anonymous. So we try to make sure we note on there when something will not be subject to the public charge so people understand. If there will be immigration consequences, we also write that. So we try very hard. We understand what a lot of people don't understand, which we do, is in our community, you may have one member of your household who's undocumented or one person who's a green card holder and then three people who are citizens. So we have so many mixed data situations that we want to be clear with everybody what kind of position they're being put in and what kind of information they're giving to the government.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, it's very important to be specific. I appreciate it. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I just think we have to, you know, if you are showing signs of being sick, people need to get tested. That's when people need to get tested and make sure that we're doing everything we're asked to do. Wear that mask, keep 6 feet away if possible from other folks, and really pay attention to our elders in our community, because that's who is most likely get infected and die.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you, so I appreciate that we were able to connect.
Thank you.